back to that. Okay, we usually try to talk about topics that were recently in the news. As recently as last month, we have the headline, Twin Girls Joined at Heads Separated at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. One between every 50,000 or 80,000 births are Siamese twins, they say, which is really higher than I would have expected. And over the years, many issues have come up, both halachic and otherwise, with Siamese twins. The fact that this was done in Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, as we'll see, has some significance to it, because halachically, by far, the most famous case of Siamese twins happened there as well. We'll just start as a ways of introduction to talk a little bit about the halachic view of Siamese twins. What is the first case of Siamese twins? So the Shavuos Yaakov makes an argument that the first Siamese twins to ever live were?
Adam and
Chava. Adam and Adam, actually.
Well, yeah.
Right. If you want to be technical about it, if you look at the Gemara in Ervin, I'm going to give you a
moment.
Right, so Rashi there quotes this Gemara in Ervin, very good. He had two faces. They would seem that originally that Adam was one person with two heads, and that eventually he was separated into Adam and Chava. This is a Midrash comment that doesn't really have much relevance. However, the Gemara in Menachos, interestingly enough, picks up this lahalacha. The Gemara comes, Tarabadim. Itter meniach tefillin b'yamino shehu smolo. So we're talking about putting on tefillin, a seasonal topic. So a fellow puts on tefillin. If he's a lefty, he's supposed to put tefillin on his right hand. Because how do we, because it says yadcha. We darsh it from yadcha, yad keha, it should be your weaker hand. So if you're a righty, your left hand's your weaker hand. If you're a lefty, your right hand's a weaker hand. Then you wrap it around your stomach. No, not really. There you go. So that's where the word sinister comes from. So, Rahatanya, meniach b'smol shehu b'smol shel kol adam. Maybe you should do it like everyone, maybe it's in general, everyone does it on their left hand. So, marbaya ki tanya hi b'sholi b'shtei yadav. No, if someone's ambidextrous, the Gemara says, then you put it on your left hand like most people do. Where exactly is on your arm? So that's your bicep over here. And bein enecha, that means you're supposed to put it over here. So hecha, amidabe avyanai, mokum shemocho shaltina achrofes. The place where it's soft when the baby is first born. Okay, so we're having a nice discussion where to put your tefillin on. Shalom shayat, shalom shalosh. Playmo jumps in and he's got a question. Interesting. By mine playma me Rebbe. Playma as Rebbe. Mishe yeshro shnei roshim be'ezvehem e'nilch tefillin. If you have two arms, you tell me which arm you put it on. What if I have two heads? You put it on, you check if he's right-headed or left-headed. You throw him a soccer ball, see which one jumps up first. So, Armalei, o kum gali, o kiba alecha shmaitam. Says, well, you have two choices now. Either you can go into Gaulis or I'll put you in Cherem. Right? Translation. Why are you wasting my time? It's like Rav Shechter kibitzes sometimes about this. He says that the mitzvah of Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh are two different mitzvahs. So what if somebody has a broken arm, right, and they can't put Tefillin on their arm? So you still put it on the Shel Rosh. If a person is missing their arms, you still put it on the Rosh. So he says, what if they're missing their head? So then you can just put it on the arm. Right?
Yeah. I think they've got
greater
worry. What? If they're missing both arms, they have trouble putting on their head anyway.
Right. Just saying.
I thought the soft spot where it has
a little further back.
Closed,
back to Nell, yeah.
Is this part up here? Because I usually see people have it here.
No, you're tefillin. Keep this in mind. They're supposed to be above the hairline. Above the hairline, okay. But closer than that point. So you've got that much space.
Got it.
The Gemara tells us you can fit two pairs of tefillin in there.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Rebbe did not react well to Playmo's question. And he says, Adahachi also how gavra. As the dude, a guy walks in the door. And the guy says, Amalei, it's Yaldili Yanuka, this by Trey Roshi.
It's a practical matter.
I just had my one, Mazel Tov, we just had a baby. Right? Two heads. Better than one. I'm right, we had a baby, it's a double header.
How long have you waited
for this bad? Right. So, Kama be'ina l'meisa l'kayin. So he turns to him and says, how much do you have to pay for Binyan Abayin? That's his question. That's his question.
Well, he doesn't have to worry about tefillin for 13 years.
Right, there's no rush on that.
But on the Binyan Abayin, he's got 30 days.
The pressure's on.
I was just waiting for him to ask like, about Yerusha. Is this guy one?
Well, we'll get there. Hopefully he has more than 13 years for that also. Asahu Saba Tanilechi of Litain Lo Yitzlam. He said, you got to give 10 sell. You got to pay for both of them. Any? He said, really? But Tanya Rami Bar Chama B'tol Shenema Pado Tifte Esbachor HaAdam Shomayani Nitra B'tol Rabin. But wait a second. I thought if it doesn't make it, how could I have to pay twice for one kid?
Wait a minute. One head was a Petah Rechim and the other one wasn't.
Right. So says, what's going on here? So the question is not special.
Two kids, only one is
Bahar. Right. So that's where I say, wait a second. Two? You kidding me?
If it was born C-section, then you don't pay nothing.
Mm, and if there were girls also. If they're calling him. Yeah. Or if they're the fourth child. You know? But obviously that's not the case here. Any of them. Or if they're not Jewish. Or if they're puppies. Right. All the, you're right. All of these are good points you make. But but not on target necessarily. Explain that out. So, it's a shani hachad the begulgolas tarach rachmana. No, it's a drasha from the pasuk. Okay, you give two. But the Gemara here first is saying that person with two heads, and all of a sudden we're having a halachic shaylas talking. We're talking about where you put on the tefillin.
Draw the chayrim for the guy who asked the question.
Right, right. So he said,
"Never mind."
Never mind. That was the direct quote. Tosfos picks up on this. Tosfos says, "Ba'olam hazeh leka." There is no such thing as a person with two heads. Tosfos says, "Avol yesh b'medrash," but there's a medrash about this guy. Ashmadai hotzi mitachas karka odem echad sheyishlo shtei rashim. So the Ashmadai, the Malach, took out a man from under the ground who had two heads. Lefnei Meshchama HaMelech. So he took him to Shchama HaMelech. Nasa isha v'holi banim kayotzebo v'shnei rashim. He got married. He had children. They also had two heads. It's great how genetics work. Right? Kayotze be ishto berosh echad. So some of them had two heads, like him, and some had one head, like his wife. Jabova chalik benichse aviyim, mishi yeshlo shnei rashim shal shnei chalakim. The guy with two heads says, I want two parts of the Yerusha. Huh? Bova dem rifne shlomo. That's the medrash. By the way, he doesn't give you the end. That's the entirety of the medrash. If you look up the medrash, the end actually, So what do you think he said?
No, give him two chalakim.
So Shlomo HaMelech said, actually he said, bring me a cup of boiling water. So he took the boiling water and he poured it on one of the heads.
If the other head cried, then it's one head.
Oh, there you go. So that's what happened. Okay, see? Mom said Shlomo HaMelech. Right. Right, so he's the same person. That's what he said. So, in fact, that there is this discussion. Now, Tosfos can't believe there's such a thing. Right? One person.
The truth is that in Siamese twins, I don't know about two heads, but the separate parts of the body have their own nervous system.
Right.
So you burn one hand, the twin's hand doesn't burn. He doesn't feel the pain.
Right. So in that case, you're saying in terms of Yerusha, you'd say we count them for two people.
Right.
Unlike the one that they dug up here, literally. Right, this one would only be one person. The first person to take this seriously, right, the first woman, she was the Shvus Yaakov. Shvus Yaakov was born 1670, died 1730 or so. So this is where the Tshuva Sefer was printed in 1709. So this is a case that goes back either to the late 17th or early 18th century, the Shaila. A guy asked the following question. Hinei re'isi dava chodesh b'chanaka. I saw something on Chanukah. Huva Meretz Lo is brought from Friday. Shnei Na'arim Goyim, two non-Jews, two children, to Umim, twin Zacharim, Shedvukim Zeb Zed, Kod Kod Roshah. Their head is attached to each other. cancer. This is the case they just took care of last month. This is a very common type of place.
The least common one.
Right. What?
Because you can be attached at the head, but not always at the top of the head.
Right, right. I think.
That sucks.
So, what happened is, they were both had complete bodies. There are two faces, four eyes. He called them four eyes. It was for real. Two noses, right? This is everything else. Right? They had ears. They were very close to each other. They were attached in a way that seemed they only had one head. Rachamod, but it was very wide, obviously, this head. But they all live their own lives. They go to different schools, not necessarily. No. Right. They don't talk to each other. I made the bracha on Mishana Habriyas, right, which is appropriate. So, right. So the question that he wants the person to ask, he says, okay, it's not practical here, but what if this ever happened to Jewish children? Then what would the halacha be? So, Rabbi Shmuel Yaakov says, what are you bothering me with this for? When it happens with Jewish people, call the rabbi who's alive then. But then once he's out of here, he's got to answer the question. So the upshot is, Kevin the Shnei Brios for Shnei Gufim Ninu in Kain Pshita Linyan Tefillin Tzar Kol Echela Niyot Tefillin. They're two different people. Each one has to put on Tefillin. Bishnei Atzmo. Al Rosho. You got to get two on that term. The Hainu HaKetzitza Al HaRosh B'mokum Sar B'nei Naim V'akesher Me'achorov K'neged HaParzif. You got to get the Tefillin in there. Linyan Yerusha Pshita the Yerush Shnei Chalakim. For sure it gets two parts for Yerusha. But they can't get married.
Yichud would be difficult.
You're saying that if they're Siamese twins, they're both boys or they're both girls.
No, I was going to ask that.
Right, so they can't marry someone else, smarty skirts.
But they do. Can Siamese twins be a boy and a girl or only the same sex for each?
They have to be identical. I read about this a little today. I'm not pretending to know what I'm talking about, unless it make you happy. So basically, it has to do with
same sex.
Right, mean that when you have a case of identical twins, of course, there's the embryo splits early on. So depending on how early, if it's very early, so you're going to get two amniotic sacs, right? If it's a little bit later, you get two placentas in one amniotic sac. And if it's past the 13th week, I think that's when you get Siamese twins. When it's that late, and they're all together, that's when you have this. So, but they have to be identical, right? And one's a boy, and then the other's a girl. I mean, I don't need to explain this, but they're not identical, right? Because girls have longer hair. That's how my mother explained it to me. Right.
Right. Not at that age.
Okay, he said, but the bottom line is they can't, if these two men can't marry a woman, why? Because Yichud would be highly inappropriate. So that's the story. So that's a practical problem, but really it's two people.
And because they would be sisters, two women can't marry a man?
Well, one man can't marry two sisters.
But two men could marry.
What?
Two sisters.
Two men can marry two sisters. This wouldn't be that practical. Okay, now the case. Okay, I give you here a write-up of the case. There were many write-ups. This actually appeared in a very long article at the time in the Philadelphia Inquirer. And early in, this is Rabbi Tendler's version, early in September 1970, drama began that added much covered, much dignity to the wisdom of the Torah. What's the story here? So, Lakewood, New Jersey, Siamese twins were born. The twins were taken by helicopter, right? You're in Lakewood, the nearest major children's hospital there is. Philadelphia. At the time, the chief surgeon in the Philadelphia Children's Hospital was?
He was the Surgeon General.
C. Everett Koop, who went on to become the Surgeon General under Reagan. Correct. Right? He was the chief of surgery. He was a good man. The question here was, so these two children, they were girls, they were attached in the, by the chest. And the chest had 1 6-chamber heart.
So one of them's got to go.
So the question was, right, so basically you have one heart. You can't get two people out of it. So the question became, and the only way to separate them would be to kill one of the two and then do surgery on the second one, hoping that the second one was going
to
survive.
So we're back to last week's question.
I think it goes back to 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, sorry. Uncertainty, whether right. you can
right.
whether you can risk one in order to save.
Right, so that is this was the practical case at the time.
It's not quite the same, because here, right. are we assuming that they're not going to live, these two Siamese?
We're saying
The
first one for sure is dead.
The one that you remove, shall we say.
No, but if you leave them alone.
So again, the assumption was that the six-chamber heart could not support the two of them.
Uh-huh. Eventually, in a few months or whatever,
they would both die.
It also says right. that the evaluation was that both would die unless they were separated.
Right. So, again, you can read through the article on yourself, but in fact, there was a fair amount of concern about this from many different angles. One angle is, if he did the surgery, Koop could be charged with murder. Now, you might think, why would they do that? I would say that 1977 was not that long after 1976. And that is relevant because in 1976 was the famous Supreme Court case of Roe v. Wade, right? Right? So this, in fact, the status of what is a living being was a very important topic at the time. I think it was 76.
Yeah.
Right?
Or was it 73?
That's what I just said.
I thought it was 73.
It was very close.
Right, but the bottom line is, whether it was 73 or 70, I think it was 73 now. But the bottom line is, the abortion debate was very, very fresh in the minds of people. What?
73.
73, confirmed. Thank you. Andy White, representing Google, has confirmed that fact. So right. Okay. Okay. That's it. Nothing is fake news. So there was a real concern. So the first things first, they got a court order allowing them to do it. But now the question is, how many people really wanted to do it? Several of the doctors and nurses asked to be removed from this case because particularly religious people, right, not necessarily Jewish religious people, were very uncomfortable with this. You know, basically, you're taking a life in the operating room.
Deliberately. It's not like by accident.
Right.
Purposely.
Right. Purposely. Right. So this became a very difficult question. And the family made it clear that they would not give consent unless the go-ahead was given by Rabbi Moses Feinstein. And with that, there was meetings, at least one meeting between the representatives from Ramosha and the surgery team to discuss what could be done. We'll skip a little bit. The simple problem of fitting a six-chamber heart into a small chest of baby B proved to be unexpectedly difficult, could only reside by building the chest larger. It seems that they had had this case before, and when they had done it previously, the surviving baby died because the chest was too small and there wasn't room for the heart to beat. So therefore, the doctors had prepared to reconstruct the chest to accommodate a larger chest thing, and what they were going to use to reconstruct the chest was
the
twins.
Right, they had an exact match. Right, that's just one example. So this started, this was going on for around 3 weeks. On October 30, the intensive care unit assigned there was no significant change in the heart rate and respiration in the electrocardiograph tracings. This was reported to Ralph Feinstein, who then posed once again the key question. Was Dr. Cube sure that the six-chamber heart could only be given to baby B? Could it not also be given to baby A and have baby B die? So his question was, well, how are we going to choose here? Right? So the doctor said, well, it seemed to them that one child had a four-chambered heart, and the other one had a two-chamber heart.
I thought it was just the one heart.
Yeah.
And it was fused together.
Ah, the hearts were
fused. Meaning that the one that had the four-chamber heart was the natural one. That was the one that had the best chance. Because
okay.
It had developed in a way, as opposed to the one with the two-chamber heart should never have been around this long. It's only because they're piggybacking on the other one. So the Moshe kept on asking, well, if I took this six-chamber heart, and I put into either one of them, could they survive? Or no, is there one that could survive and the other one it wouldn't work with? Dr. Cooper responded that there was no doubt that the only infant who could be helped by surgery was baby B, because in addition to the shared liver and heart, baby A also had a circulatory defect that would not permit her to survive any length of time, even if she was given the six-chambered heart. That the other baby had serious issues beyond this issue. With that, Ramosha gave the go-ahead.
It seems like what's the question at that point?
Well, so let's see. Well, why is it? Basically, you're killing a child.
Well,
I think that's the question.
No, understood, but if baby A is not going to make it anyways.
So can you kill a baby? So yeah, someone's going to die, so you can kill them?
I don't know that you can.
I know that you can't.
Right, I don't think
you can. I'm going to go on record as we are right now.
I don't think you can pull ever, but the question is if you could try to save another person.
So again, we do not assume that we take one life to save another life.
Did baby B survive? How did
this end? Well, you got to get to the end of this year.
Oh. Get to the end of the article.
Well, it's funny because the article starts again at number 13. But that doesn't have the answer either. It's not that that has the answer either.
But
yes.
Can we just say that one of the babies was, besides having the heart defect, also had other ailments?
Correct.
To prove
that's
it.
Why the Moshe gave.
Right, right. Exactly. So,
right, so the question is halachically, you have to understand that. You know, again, if there is a person that will only survive another month or two. We don't allow you to kill them. Right.
You can never pull a plug on a patient just on that is going to...
We're not pulling the plug. We're taking a knife and chopping the heart in half.
There's these cases where you say someone's going to die in a month or so. You can't just pull the plug.
Yeah, they give the whole heart to
them. Right. Okay. So, you know, no, we're just chopping the heart out of this baby. Yeah. Right? Okay. It's a little bit more like Snow White. You might think of it that way.
So they're separating off two chambers from the four.
No, they're not. They keep the six.
Oh, they do keep the six.
They're giving all six to the other one.
Oh, I thought they were taking two away.
Ramosha never published a tshuva on the topic.
He's too sensitive.
However, that didn't stop other people from publishing what he said.
Example.
Right? So basically, Ramosha had two reasons, they explained, that he allowed. This was actually reported, among other places, in the Philadelphia Inquirer. The Philadelphia Inquirer did not give the Mara Makomas, but it gave the Svaras as to why it did. Right?
That's good.
I read the article. It was a good article. I read it today. The Mishnah in Allah says, Ha'isha shehi maksha leled. If a woman is having a grave difficulty in giving birth to the point where her life is in danger. You can do a late term abortion in order to save the mother's life. However, once the majority of the child has come out, at that point, we can't help the mother. We don't kill one person to save another person.
It would seem from this that an ubar is not called alive until he doesn't come out.
Well, again, So this is related to the abortion question, which might be a good topic beyond this. But again, it seems that that an abortion would be allowed to save someone's life up to that at that
the
point.
The fetus would not be considered a chai until it's
well, again, right, right. It doesn't mean that it's mutter, but yeah, again, but meaning that it wouldn't be considered shvichas domim. But right, that doesn't mean that they
at the same time, a still baby has to have a bris. At a certain point,
There's a minug that we do it at the burial because of a medrash by Avram Avinu. But halach, you don't make a bracha on it.
No,
Elio doesn't come. That doesn't. What? Well, we have an expert in the crowd here.
Don't we learn in the Chumash in Parshas Mishpatim that a stillborn baby comes out not alive is not given a bris because he has to live a certain amount of time?
No, we don't learn that in Parshas Mishpatim. But
no, it brings it up.
I may be wrong. Good news, we have a Chumash.
Oh, I thought I could remember learning that.
Find it. Wrong. We'll discuss it.
Okay. So why do we
have a birth to a stillborn? What? No. It's a medrash. There's no real halachic reason for it. This Mishnah in Olos is quoted in Sanhedrin, which explains it a little bit. Amar Rav Huna katan harodef nitan latzila benafsha. So obviously, if someone's running after someone to murder someone else, right, you're allowed to kill the hitman. What if the hitman is 10 years old? Can you shoot the kid?
He's a hit boy.
Hit girl. Right? So again, if he kills the guy, he's not going to get the death penalty.
But the guy's going to be dead, nevertheless.
Right, according to many opinions.
So it's pikuach nefesh.
So the Gemara says, you might have thought that not because he's not going to get the death penalty. No. Hakatan harodef nitan latzila benafsho. No, you could kill the kid also. Kasaba harodef ein atzar chasra. It's not a matter you have to give hasra. You don't have to say, what you're doing is wrong. You got to save the person. Loshna gadol, loshna katan. It doesn't matter if it's a gadol or katan. You've got to save the person who's being pursued. What's an example? Ein se rav chizda rav huna, yatsa rosho ein nogimbo. Fish ein doche nefesh vipnei nefesh. But wait a second. In the case of childbirth, the baby is killing the mother. So why don't we let you kill the baby? Because the baby's a rodef. The baby's a murderer. So the baby's not bar mitzvah, he's not bar das, so what?
I thought we said we could.
Right, but we said right in the Mishnah, we said that up until the point that the head comes out,
right,
you can do a late-term abortion. Once the head comes out, you don't touch the kid.
The majority comes out.
Okay.
Good thing we got Jenny
here. Right. So again, it says Yatza Rosha. We assume Rosha and Verubo are similar. That's wonderful. We should never have this question.
Okay.
Good. Shani Hosad the Mishmaya Karadfila. No, it's not the kid that's being rodef the mother. It's a decision from heaven. That's an issue not with the kid. The kid's not actively trying to kill the mother. It's just the set of circumstances. So the first approach that you would say is what? That here, that baby A is a rodef, is a pursuer of baby B. And therefore, you're allowed to kill baby A in order to save baby B. That is Moshe's first approach, that this is the same idea, just like that this is a case of rodef. And even though it's a katan, it's a baby, doesn't make a difference. No. That's what we said, even a child.
It says.
Right, no intent.
Are you saying the child without intent who's accidentally going
to... If accidentally someone leaves their AK-47 around, and a kid picks it up and starts shooting, and the only way I can stop this kid is to shoot the kid...
You're allowed to do it.
I'm allowed allowed to. I should do it. The kid had no intent. The kid has no idea what he's doing. Doesn't make a difference. So too here. So that's approach number one that Rav Moshe supposedly went with.
So what makes the baby A the rover as opposed to the
other? That's a good question. We'll get to that. What? So again, that's an excellent question. It's an excellent question. Like, in this case, they would seem to be rodef each other. Right, you know?
Well, A has something that B needs.
He's keeping A alive. A is killing B.
No, not necessarily. Again,
the two can't live.
Why do you assume the heart belongs to B?
Well, because B has four chambers, which you can live with a four-chamber heart. And
they both have six chambers.
Right. Right.
But they can't sustain them both.
Well, again, I assume it's the way it's wired. Who's getting the blood from which chambers? Yes?
Isn't it a case of only once the one baby dies, which is predicted, that it will then kill the other because it's dead and it'll... I mean, how do you have something dead attached to you? So one's not killing the other. It's only after the fact.
Well...
After it dies, will it kill the other?
So, I don't know. Again, medically, I don't know that if that's true, what you just said. But you just assumed that the danger to the second child is the fact that it'll have a dead first one.
No. I mean, you don't have circulation. I mean, you need to be able to provide circulation to both brains.
And that's
not exciting. But I mean, no.
But that's going to be a problem even before it does.
Yeah,
right. That's why I think that scientifically that's not true. That's approach number one. Approach number two is a Yerushalmi that we've done previously. Tani siyas b'nei adam shehayu mahalchim b'derech ufagu lehem gayim. There was a caravan that was going and they get attacked. Amru tnu lanu echad mikem v'naharog oso. So give us one and we'll kill him. V'im lav hare anu hargim es kolchem. Now we're going to kill you all. We say, too bad. They said, I want that guy over there. Kagon Sheva ben Bichri, like the story in Shmuel Beis about Sheva ben Bichri. Yimsru also bo yahargo. Then you give the guy over and you save your lives. Bo yahargo. Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, v'hu she'chayiv misa ki Sheva ben Bichri. That's only if the guy's chayiv misa. If not, same deal. Rav Yochanan omar af al bishe eno chayiv misa ki Sheva ben Bichri. So again, the question is, if there is one specific person that if you don't, that person's going to, either we're going to kill you and that guy, or just that guy. And they turn around and say, that the halacha is according to Rav Yochanan, that you go and you give over that guy.
It happened in the Holocaust all the time.
So in this case, the question was, what happens if you turn the... So, either way, according to the doctors, baby A is not going to make it. So the question is, either baby A and B dies, or just baby A dies?
Maybe we can save B.
Right.
There's no guarantee that's, with B. Right.
No, there's not, no guarantee. Even if you peek the head, there's no guarantee. So at the end of the day, Rav Moshe says that's the equivalent case here. We have if you have a chance of saving one, since it's a specific one that's going to die either way. You'll note that there's a machlokas here. However, according to the opinion of Reish Lakish, that only applies if the baby is or the person is chayiv misa. Is liable for the death penalty. Is baby A liable for the death penalty?
No.
Absolutely not. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's a yichdu, it works, but according to Rish Lakish, it doesn't work.
But wait.
I'll wait.
The story of the caravan, you don't give us one person. The person's going to die within a matter of minutes
anyway.
Baby A might have a little bit more time. We're still killing them early.
Saving one.
No, again, if we turn around and we say we're not going to give the person over, so we'll buy time for that person, right? We'll hide him in the back, and you have to kill us all until you get to him or her. So, you know, in either case, the Chaye Shah doesn't concern us that much. So who do we follow? Do we follow Rav Yochanan or Reish Lakish? It's an important question here. So you look at the Rambam. The Rambam says, let's see. Give over one of them, one of the women, or else we're going to take them all. You don't give them anyone. Or if you say, hey, just give us a person to kill, we don't give them over. Or if the person says, they said, give us that person. If the guy was chayim misa, then you in fact do it. If right. So if he holds like Reish Lakish, going to the Rambam, this doesn't work. Okay. That is unrelated. That is correct. The Ramah quotes La Halacha. Of the Kochavim Shomer Yisrael, Tnu Lanu Echad Mikem V'Nargenu Lo Yitnu Lahem Echad Mihem Ela Im Kem Yichdu Ba'Omru Tnu Lanu Ploni. Who's that? Say, give us a specific one. That is the Rambam. V'Yeshom Jafil Kai Gavde In Lamasa Ela Im Kem Chayim Misa Kishav Ben Bichri. It's a machokas. They quote both opinions. So to rely on this to kill a person, that's fine. Rabbi Kiva Eger asked Dr. Mogiars this question. He said, let's have a case. Yeshim Mokum Safik, Bishnaim wrote from Zachar Zeh. Two people are trying to kill each other. Okay? Vizeh Achar Zeh Laharog, Vizeh Shneim Be'akecha. They both started at the same time. Right? It's a duel.
Hatfields and McCoys.
Right? Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. I see them. They both got gut. They both took the paces at the same time. They both aimed. I am a bystander. Can I shoot one of them?
Both volunteered for that.
Did you?
Right? So that's what he asked. No. Im echad haroe rashai lara kol chad minai olo d'b'chai gavin ein gam la'echad behem din rodef l'hanosin l'hatzal nasho kevin k'shakmoshu hu rodef l'chavero kein hu nirdaf me'chavero.
And neither of them have that status. Both can kill each other.
Both is a rodef. Both are a nirdaf. So what am I doing on the side?
You can't be a rodef if you're a nirdaf. Right. There is no rodef.
So that's exactly the question that was asked. Shoot him in the hand because with the leg they can still shoot. So the question that's this, Rav David Pavarsky actually asked this question. How does Rav Moshe turn around and say that A is a road day for B, just as B is a road day for A, and if A is a road day for B and B is a road day for you as the doctor can't do anything. So Rav Moshe's decision, some people were not thrilled with the svara behind it. At the end of the day, Rabbi Bleich, years later, almost 20 years later, wrote an excellent article on the topic, which we do not have here. And he goes and he agrees with Rav Moshe, but lav mitame, different reason. So in the co-joined states, the twins are certainly mutual aggressors. Right? They're both rodafs. Right twin unintentionally threatens the normal longevity anticipated of the left twin. The right twin, however, because of his congenital allies, cannot survive a period of more than 12 months individual. It may well be argued, must be regarded as a trefa. The case with regard to feticide, murder of a trefa is not a fence. Accordingly, although both are pursuers, the right twin is an act of pursuit that is qualitative of greater magnitude pursuant to which the left twin. Basically, he said, yeah, they're both erodic. But to kill a trefa is much less of a problem than killing someone who's not a trefa. Right? The Gemara in Makkos famously says that you know, if I was a defense lawyer in Beis, then I could get anybody off. Why? You bring two of them that Shlomo shot somebody, Okay. I, as his attorney, turn around and say, how do you know the guy wasn't the trefa? Did you do an autopsy? Maybe the guy would have died anyhow. So they said, we did a complete autopsy. And they said, well, how do you know he didn't have cancer right where Shlomo shot him?
And on and on and on. Yeah.
That's as far as it goes. So there's no more ons after that. Right? So the Gemara there says that technically you could get everyone off that way. Indicating what? That the fact that you're a trefa moves it down from being a capital offense. Right? So the argument here is, in this case, yeah, you don't shoot either one, but to kill the baby B that has a chance to survive, that you can't do. But baby A is a trefa. Baby A really didn't have a chance to live anyhow. Therefore, what was going on was not murder. And because it was not murder...
Splitting
babies, actually. Right? You want to be technical about this. Right?
I mean, why do we have to go all the way to the point of trefa? I mean...
Well, where would you like to go?
One is more viable than the other. One has more of a chance.
But we don't kill people because they're more or less viable.
Well, we did in this case.
No, the argument is you didn't. That this, that one that didn't have a status of a full living person because it was a trefa. That's what. However, if they both had chances of making it, the answer would have been no.
Both didn't have chances. One had more anomalies and made it more.
Right, but again, right. So, but how do you just the mere fact? Again, we don't kill trefas.
Okay.
Right. The question here is you have two people that both are rodfim, the argument Rabbi Bleich makes. And to kill one of them would be capital murder, but the other one wouldn't be because that one's a trefa. That's not a problem.
I just have another question. Artificial hearts are not great, but could you say...
But they're better than nothing.
They're better than nothing. Yeah.
You got to have heart. Well, miles and miles of heart.
What's interesting is
that could you say to the surgeon, okay, put an artificial heart in baby A, therefore saying you're not killing baby A.
Well, again, I believe they didn't have that technology in 77.
Maybe A didn't die for 3 days after the surgery.
Right, what was his name? Barney Clark? What was the name of the first guy to get a...
Bernard. Dr. Bernard was the surgeon.
Well, you don't
What?
He's saying, would the case be different now? I think that's what he's trying to ask.
So, basically,
Well, again, I would hope that they would try to say both. If they give him
medicine, maybe.
I don't know. Okay. So, in fact, they went forward with it. Number 13, on October 6th, Rav Feinstein asked me to call Dr. Cooper and instruct him to go ahead with the surgery. On Tuesday, October 11th, the surgery was completed. Baby B successfully survived the surgery. Baby A had to be sacrificed. That is, of course, not the end of the story. Right. Very interesting. I came upon
Baby A survived for 3 days afterwards, huh?
Correct.
Yes. Did he survive without a heart?
No, baby B.
No, baby B.
Where do you see?
No, it says here on the bottom.
Second twin is baby B. A, B.
A survived.
The second twin died about 3 days after surgery.
Second twin is baby B.
Right, that's the one that they tried to save. Right. They both ended up dying.
So both died.
Right.
I don't read it that way.
Well, again, he died.
The baby baby B died?
Yeah.
That's
3 days. I don't read it that way, babe.
Read number 14. Read number 14.
I'm saying I read it. I assumed that it meant baby A.
It's interesting that this, again, this article with Dr. Koop, right?
Oh, I see.
Okay. Right, the second twin, leading to some to ponder whether quicker medical attention could have saved her. Coop answered that it's a little value in what if questions. What's interesting is I saw in another article, and it doesn't really matter, that the baby actually survived over 40 days and eventually died from getting hepatitis B from a blood transfusion. So I saw that, again, I don't know what the facts are, but he said one way. But with this other article, which seemed to be much more methodical, made it clear that the baby did not die from this. The baby died around 6 weeks later due to
So this is, I mean, but the other question is, one of the babies died 3 days later, and the other one died several weeks later.
No, no. Again, the one died instantly. The one that didn't have a heart, the one without a heart, did not survive. The question is, when did
the baby B die?
Right. When did the baby B die?
So 3 days.
Right. So this article says 3 days, and another one says not that way. So I'm telling you, it doesn't matter for us. In fact, whether the baby survived or not doesn't really matter, truth be told.
No, but that actually brings
truth be told.
That brings a question.
But Jenny's been so interested.
No,
so.
That brings up a question, though.
Yes.
I assume that if it's 3 days, is this even a practical case? Because baby A and B technically probably could have lived longer than 3 more days. So then,
lo navi velo ben navi anochi. I don't know how long. Again, you take risks.
And let's just
sometimes
you're
wrong. What?
Let's just even say the 6 weeks case. It seems like both babies here, while trying to
again,
save
again, wait, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Everyone right. wants to be the Monday morning quarterback. At the end of the day, though, practically, they had no chance of surviving if you did nothing, and they had some chance of surviving if you did this. Now that some chance didn't work out, that. There wasn't a 100% guarantee. The doctor said from the get-go, he thought that the chance of either baby making it was slim, but slim is better than nothing.
Right. Take the chance.
So that's the story. So again, this is another example, a fascinating example. And thankfully, hopefully, it's a case where maybe as we advance in our medical ability and knowledge, it becomes less problematic. But this is a case, so it's a very difficult case and a very fascinating case just because of the interplay of Dr. Koop and Moshe Feinstein. Dr. Koop.
Was the family Jewish?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what the first part.
Yeah.
Rabbi Moses Feinstein was
called in. But it ends up that Dr. Koop, you should know, every day before he did surgery, read the Bible. He was a very religious man himself. And he was very, very respectful of everything, and he spoke very highly of it.
He looked very Quakerish.
Yeah, that I don't know. That, yes.
I'm assuming the family's Quakerish. Name was kept private.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. So again, that was the question. It seems that it took a long time to get the facts down. You know, it took a long time to figure out that there is one heart, that it's a six-chamber heart, that, you know, what's hooked up to it. It seems that was really holding them back is the facts. Again, the idea of if Moshe really was interested in topics like Rodef, etc., he needed to know, could either one survive, right? Could they both survive? These are the basic questions that until you have answers to these questions, it's Sheva Al Tasa, and you can't make any decision.
You can't move forward.
Okay.